for today before we go into executive session and then go into Merlot time is item 21, forest management update, and that's Richard. I'll turn it on to you, over to you.
Director Storer, Chair Smith and Commission, I'm here to kind of give an update on where we are with our forestry program. I've been coming to you a lot lately asking for permission to do projects that are over a million board feet. And last time we met, somebody said, well, why don't you come back and tell us how the projects turned out? And for anybody here who, in the audience who doesn't know what a million board feet is, a board foot is a board that's a foot wide, a foot long, and 1 inch thick. And whenever we do projects that are over a million board feet, I have to get approval from the commission. And in just a way to visualize that, it's about 175 logging trucks. That's kind of the threshold from when I come. So I'm just going to review what we've accomplished since the forest management strategy was adopted in 2014. And basically our goal is to just manage our forests for fish and wildlife habitat and also for recreation. And we do that with pre-commercial thinning, commercial thinning, prescribed fire. And the biggest issue we have on our land is, especially in eastern Washington, we've taken fire off the landscape. So instead of having these open, park-like forests with big, widely scattered trees, you get these really dense thickets, which isn't great for wildlife, and it's not great for public safety and the public cost of fighting big wildfires. So we've got this huge fire deficit. If you went back a couple hundred years ago, 11% of the forest burned on average every year. But those fires were usually pretty tame. They just kind of crept around and didn't get real hot, except in some areas where they might go up a ravine or a north slope or something like that. We did a really good job of putting those fires out for decades, but the fuels have built up so high that as a society, we simply can't stop them, and they're burning bigger and badder than they ever did before. Since 2013, we've had about 4% of the forest on our land burn on average per year, and those fires do not maintain the forest like they used to. A lot of times they're just killing every tree. Now, we recently, since 2014, we've tripled the amount of thinning we do in our forests. So last year we did 2,200 acres, but that represents a little over 1%. So if you take the big fires and what we're doing, we're still not keeping up with the fire deficit. But we are we're on a better trajectory than we were before. A secondary issue we have on our land is we often acquire land that was previously owned by a timber company, and they were managing the trees as a plantation up until we got it. So it's just like a cornfield. They're very dense, one species, no sunlight getting to the ground, very little diversity. So we're trying to take those and put them in a trajectory where they can be more like the historic condition. Since 2014, we've gone from one forester to four foresters. And we've managed to get some terrific foresters. We've got two in Ellensburg, one at Oak Creek in Natchez, and one down in Clarkston. Now, our funding situation has evolved quite a bit in the last few years. For the first time ever, we got capital funding to do forest thinning work. In the past, we've pretty much relied on RCO grants and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation grants, so we were always kind of chasing grants. Last biennium, we got $800,000, $500,000 we put into prescribed burning, and $300,000 we put into commercial thinning. We did 1,400 acres of commercial thinning with that, and we did 250 acres of pre-commercial thinning. Some other things we have going on, there's a Forest Service grant where we're going to be doing 500 acres of treatment here near Wenatchee, up in the Stimmelt Basin. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation is helping us with several small projects. Last year, our projects, we've got some foresters who came from DNR, and they're very savvy at timing the market and playing the market and talking to different loggers and getting kind of bidding wars going up. And we actually made $500,000 in revenue on our timber sales last year. That's not normal. That's not sustainable. Our forests are probably never going to be a rainmaker for us. But this year we hope to make maybe $200,000 in revenue off our timber sales. But probably the most exciting news is in the capital budget in February, we got $5 million for forest health treatments. And we're splitting that between the prescribed burning team and the forestry program. So here's kind of a map of the state and where we've been working since 2014. Since the plan was adopted, we've treated 5,257 acres. Two-thirds of that has been commercial thinning. One-third has been pre-commercial thinning. And as you see there, the bulk of the work has been right around Ellensburg. We've done 3,300 acres between Ellensburg and Yakima. But we've scattered that out across all of eastern Washington. So now I'm just going to give you some examples of projects we've done in the last few years. This is and what we're trying to do is we're trying to restore that open park-like forest. We don't want it all to look that way. We still have patches that are thick and dense. But historically, the forest around here, 50 to 70% of the forest in the pine belt look like that. And nowadays, it's about 3%. You can drive around a long time looking for something that looks like that. And that's basically a completed stand. We've thinned out the younger trees, and we've left the bigger ones, and we left them kind of not perfectly spaced, but kind of clumpy. So here's a look at a project we did down at Grouse Flats, down in the Blue Mountains. And there's a before picture and an after picture. And one of the things, it looks like we took out most of the trees, and we did, but we took out mostly little trees. And those trees are the ones that cause the ladder fuels for the fire to climb from the ground up in the top of the big trees. And in general, our projects over the last 4 years, typically we take about two-thirds of a logging truck per acre. But because we're taking all those little trees, it totally changes the look and feel of the forest.
Is there value to the little trees?
Yes. If they're really small, they're pulp.
How small are?
If it's the top of the tree is 2 inches, uh-huh. Those are usually what they call pulp or huesaw. And those have really low value. It often costs more money to get them to the mill than they're worth, but we need to get them out anyways. So we lose money on those smallest ones. But the trees that are around 5 inches and 8 inches, those are valuable. And the way the mills are set up nowadays, 11 inches is like the ideal, the perfect. That's what they want. So, and a lot of those trees in the forest are those 5, 8, 11, 12-inch trees.
So one last question. A five-inch tree, what's that cut up into? Used for?
They can make a couple 2x4s. A 2x4 is 1.5 inches by 3.5 inches. Okay. So.
Okay. And back to a couple of your questions. As far there again, we always used to think of 2x4s, but with pallets and all of that, and especially, like Rich says, you get into the hue mills and that kind of stuff. And one thing that's going to make your life a lot more easy, the chip market is hot.
It is now, yeah.
And I just got a 20% increase in my ton wood or my pulp wood. So a lot of that, like over on the Grouse Flats where they were logging last summer, by the time you put the freight on it, it was a little tough. Now you're going to be able to get that, so... And there again, just in general, all of the log market's good this year.
Yeah, yeah. And back to the chips. This last year, we sold on a 1,400-acre project here in Ellensburg. We sold all the chips to Home Depot, and they use it. If you go buy a bag of bark for your yard, all up and down the West Coast, it came off of our land. So, sorry.
Do you have a sort of standard protocol about leaving snags and other wildlife useful remains, or is that sort of done case by case?
What we do is we look at the forest type, and the different forest types historically had different densities of trees and different sizes of trees. So, for example, if it's ponderosa pine savanna, historically they were between 10 and 30 large trees.
Right.
And so we're looking at, if it's the south-facing slope, we might be down to the lower at 20, 25 trees, and on the north-facing slope, we might be more 20 or 30. And if we're a little higher elevation and it's a mixed conifer stand, we might be 35 or 40. What we're trying to do is get it in a trajectory to kind of match the historic conditions for the different forest type.
And what about snags?
We leave all the snags unless it's a safety hazard. I shouldn't say we leave all the snags unless they're safety. Yeah, there's some areas where, like at Scatter Creek, we're trying to restore prairie, and we can't have all those snags falling down and interfering with prairie restoration work.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. So back to Grouse Flats. Here's Grouse Flats before and after. Here's a picture kind of showing why it was important to thin Grouse Flats. The picture on the left is 1971, and you can see that forest is kind of, it's not a complete cover of trees. There's openings, it's blotchy, there's kind of a mosaic. And then you look at the picture from 2015, it's completely filled in. There's dense forest everywhere. And here's what happens when you allow that to occur. The little blue rectangle in the to the right, that is the Grouse Flats wildlife area, and the black crosshatch area, that's the 77,000-acre grizzly fire. Our forester had to evacuate and wasn't allowed to be there for a week or two because of that fire. It almost burned up before we were able to treat it. So, we've got similar stories for other ones. So here is the L.T. Murray. This is up in the Hutchins and Tainham drainages. There's a before and after shot. And here's some other stuff on the L.T. Murray. And I showed this because I don't want you to think that our treated forests all look the same. These pictures are all from the same project. It's just we work with what's there. So in some areas, we don't have any big trees. So like in the top right, we're trying to thin them out so that we can grow big trees. In the bottom right, there's a great big old Douglas fir tree that's several hundred years old. We thinned all around it so that the little trees wouldn't carry the fire into the big tree. But it's got lots of space and it should continue to live for a long time. Here's a picture from the Met How. And this is one of the few places when we're lucky and the weather cooperates, we can do this on the snow. And so you can see a treated on the left versus untreated on the right. And the nice thing is when we can do that, the next spring there's no soil disturbance and the flowers come up and it's like you'd never know we were in there. Here's the LeClaire Wildlife Area up in northeastern Washington. This is land that had been forest. It was cleared for farming. And then they abandoned the farmland, and it grew in extremely thick. And we wanted to kind of open it up and make a larch savanna. There's lots of larch trees. They're not going extinct, but there used to be a ecological system called larch savanna. And it was this open park-like forest with monstrous, great big larch trees. You can still see some pockets of them, like Loop Loop Pass. And so we put this one back on that trajectory to look like that.
And it looked like what you replaced is Doug Fir. You just sort of...
What's that?
It looks like what was replaced was Doug Fir that grew in.
In on the left there?
Yeah.
There was a lot of lodgepole, and there's some Doug Fir mixed in.
Okay.
So I think you're seeing some of the closest ones, the needles, you're seeing Doug Fir. But there was a lot of lodgepole on that site. Lodgepole is really good at coming in at abandoned fields and stuff like that. Yeah.
So it was completely cleared out and then replanted.
You look at the
basically.
1951 photos, and yeah, it was largely cleared out. So here's Rustler's Gulch, north of Spokane. And so what we've done is we've thinned out the medium-sized trees. You can see that. And what we're going to do, the plan is to come in, hopefully this year, with some prescribed fire and kind of thin out those smaller ones so we don't have to pay people to go in and slash them by hand. And the nice thing is, you know, people think, oh, big equipment is really bad. But if you go into a site, when you get away from the landing and out in the middle, a lot of times those things have a really light touch. That area was just thick, thick trees and nothing but pine needles. A year later, it's going to be just thick grass and you'll never know we were in there. Kind of like in that picture there. But oftentimes what you do is you'll drive up to the end of the road and you're right at the landing. And we do make a mess at the landing. You know, there's big piles of junk where we load the trucks, and then we have to burn and plant, that kind of thing. So if you're ever out on one of our sites, I encourage you to walk back in away from the landing to see what the rest of the unit looks like.
Even with that, Rich, when you get some disturbance, it helps recycle the nutrients, especially in our dry world.
Yep.
You bust those up and get it down on the ground, because if it's laying on top of the ground, it just gets old and it won't break down, so a little disturbance does help recycle the nutrients.
Right. So we hit a big milestone this last year. This is something that started before my time, and so it's probably before a lot of you as well, is back in 2007, we made a deal. We had 32,600 acres of land on the Oak Creek, the Weenass, and the LT Murray wildlife areas around Ellensburg. When we bought the land, we didn't buy the timber rights. So the timber companies were still coming in and whacking down the trees for 40 years after we bought the land. And the agency kind of got tired of that and wanted to somehow get those timber rights. But we didn't have enough money to buy them. So what we did is we made a deal where we agreed to sell 25 million board feet of timber off of the Sherman Creek Wildlife Area to pay for a one-time logging to pay for the permanent timber rights on those three wildlife areas. And that's been going on for the last 10 years, and that just finished up this last spring.
That's great.
So through the kind of the timber harvesting, we took the value of that timber and acquired 32,600 acres of timber rights. And the nice thing is, you know, we didn't just give the people, the loggers, carte blanche to, like, obliterate Sherman Creek. We had a really nice restoration prescription where they were leaving the 35 biggest trees per acre. And so the bottom on the bottom pictures there are Sherman Creek areas, so you can see what it looks like where before we treated it, or where places we did not treat, and the areas that we've treated now. So we were able to do that restoration and pay for timber rights elsewhere. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of valuable timber elsewhere, so it's not like we can pull this off very much in the future. Okay, here's just a look at our pre-commercial thinning projects. These are trees that are too small. There's no economic value to them. So you just send crews out there working by hand, and they're cutting out the smaller trees. So here we're trying to get, historically, this was a pine and larch forest, and there's got a lot of grand fir coming up in it. So somebody just goes in there and whacking out the extra trees. And there's a look. And here we do have some big trees, and we've just had a lot of little ones come in, but they're not worth anything. So we just kind of pre-commercially thin them. And there's a look at one from the Met How. So moving forward, the legislature required the Department of Natural Resources to come up with a kind of a broad, holistic plan to restore forests in eastern Washington. After the big fire seasons, they were directed to come up with a big plan. And they've done that And basically, they have a 20-year plan now to restore 1.25 million acres across eastern Washington. And we're going to be part of that plan. We can't have DNR having this massive million-acre plan and Fish and Wildlife off on the side trying to do our own thing. Our chances of getting funding is much better if we're integrated in a holistic strategy. So we're doing that. We're working with DNR on that. And it's a good thing because they're not, you know, while we care about Fish and Wildlife primarily, we also care about protecting people's home from fire and stuff like that. And if we're tied into a bigger DNR strategy to meet a wide range of goals, we can do that. So one of the things we've done is we've gone and done a preliminary look at all of our forests so we know where it's possible to treat the forests. And so we've got three categories. We have one category where there's no treatment needed, it's just fine. The other category, yeah, it needs treatment, but there's some reason why we can't do it. Usually it's too steep, usually there's no roads, but sometimes it's off limits because of spotted owl circle or, you know, riparian buffers, things like that. And then there's this third category where, yes, it needs treatment and it is possible to do something. And so we've mapped all of our wildlife areas, and here's basically what they look like. So you can see the areas where it's too hard to do anything, where it doesn't need anything, and where we can do something. And so now we're working with DNR as far as coming up on a watershed scale, what can we do to kind of help maximize the benefits, not just on our property, but just to everybody in general. And here's a DNR's kind of prioritized map, and turns out our wildlife areas tend to all be in the high priority areas because we have low forests kind of down at the bottom. So here's our goals for this coming year. Capital budget was passed in February, and when I put these slides together, we were planning on doing about 4,000 acres this year, but I think we're going to probably be able to do about 5,000. And a lot of that's going to be pre-commercial thinning. We can only move so fast with the commercial projects, so we're going to do a lot of pre-commercial thinning in the plantations that we bought from timber companies in the last few years. But we're going to do another 400 acres down in the Blue Mountains. We're going to do some plantation release in western Washington. We're going to do some oak restoration at Scatter Creek in western Washington. And we've got a little bit more to do up at Sherman Creek, because when we harvested all that, those acres for that exchange to get the timber rights, they didn't get 28 acres or 40 acres right around the headquarters building, and we kind of want to make that a little more fire safe. So we got a little more to do up there. And here's just kind of look at what we're talking about. So here's the 4-0. There's a lot of really dense areas, but there's also some really wonderful open park-like areas. And we want to get some more of those dense ones on a trajectory to more like the open stuff. Here's a picture of Mount St. Helens. We're going to be working there this summer. That was planted as a plantation, and it's never been thinned, and it's hard to take a picture because it's so dark in there. And that one's the one where I said we might make a couple thousand dollars in revenue this year. That's the project that would do it. And then kind of releasing oak trees at Scatter Creek because the Doug Fir crowded them in and shading them out. Okay. Well, that's everything.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
That was very informative.
Yes.
So I think we're going to be moving right along.
You bet.